For a young humanoid female, she weighs more than I would have expected. Kiakta let out a tired whoosh of air as he and his companion set the sack down on the bed. In response to movement within, Bulgan released the seal at the top. Sitting up, Barris shuffled the sack off her shoulders. It fell to her waist and, when she stood, to her feet. Her ankles were strapped together and her hands secured behind her back. A quick glance downward, then up at her captors, found her focusing on Kiakta's smile. "Looking for this, apprentice?" From a bag slung at his waist, he removed her service belt. It contained all of her personal gear, including her comlink and lightsaber. Shuffling over, Bulgan tentatively fingered the latter.
"Jedi lightsaber. Always want try one."
Kiakta yanked the belt away, let it slip back into the open bag like a sedated snake. "Don't touch that, you idiot!" Unable to run or gesture, Barris sat down on the bed. "You obviously know who I am, what I represent. Are you aware that even as we speak, there are 3 Jedi hunting furiously for me, and that they will not be happy when they find out what has happened?" Kiakta laughed while Bulgan chortled gruffly. "Let them look. They will not find you here." He indicated the high, smooth walls that enclosed them. "This is a safe place, and in any case, you'll not stay here long." Remembering, he flicked the switch on his call-in. "Already others being notified. They come here, take you off our hands. Then we a little rich, and done with you as well." Choosing not to dispute the claim, she continued quietly. "What do you, or whoever you work for, want with me?" The 2 Alwari exchanged a look. "Not our business," Kiakta finally replied. "Catching you, our job. Questions, not our job." He turned to leave the room. "Report in success now. I looking forward to it." He gave his companion a shove. "Watch her close, Bulgan. Beware Jedi tricks."
"No worry, Kiakta."
Hunched over but alert, the other Alwari settled himself on a bench opposite the shackled human.
"Bulgan, watch carefully."
Barris stared as the single door closed heavily behind the one who called himself Kiakta. A loud click followed his exit. Without her lightsaber, she would not be able to penetrate the barrier, and her limited mastery of the Force was not sufficient to allow her to pierce it mentally. She was trapped until her friends could locate her. That they would do so, she did not doubt. As time passed, she waited for her guard to grow tired or to leave. He did neither. Nor was she able, try as she might, to influence his mind. That could be, she reflected, because according to every indication, there was not much mind there to influence. That might explain why neither she nor her master had sensed its hostile intentions. They had used the unconscious shopkeeper to distract her attention. Upset with herself at falling for the diversion, she repressed the growing irritation. Anger was another kind of distraction, one she could not presently afford.
"You speak fondly of your boss, Ban."
She made a conscious effort to appear and sound as helpless and resigned as possible.
"Who might that imposing individual be?"
A slow smile spread across her guard's face.
"Padawan, try fool Bulgan. No Jedi tricks here. Bulgan and Kiakta little slow, maybe, but that not mean we stupid."
Rising and lumbering forward, he loomed over her seated form. A broad-chested, bald-pated, threatening mass of muscle and bone, unusually massive for an Ancyonian.
"You think Bulgan stupid?"
"I did not say that, nor did I mean it," she responded soothingly.
The Alwari backed off.
"But I do see something else about you that I am sure of."
The hulking native's eyes narrowed dangerously.
"What that? Careful be, Padawan human. Bulgan not afraid of you."
"I can see that. What I also see, and can sense in ways you cannot imagine, is that both you and your accomplice are in pain, and probably have been so for a long time."
Bulgan's brown, gold-flecked Ancyonian eye bulged even wider than usual.
How you know that?"
"In addition to the usual Jedi training, many of us have our own specialties, areas of learning that we are especially drawn toward. Myself, I am a practicing healer,
But you human, not Ancyon.
I know. Her tone was tender, reassuring, compelling. And I can't fix your poor back or give you a prosthetic to replace your missing eye. But the pain in your mind is akin to the pain nearly all warm-blood sentients experience. It arises from certain kinds of neural breakdowns and malfunctions. It's as if someone was trying to wire a very complex computer, and all the necessary materials and components were laid out before her, but she wasn't quite sure how to link everything together. So she did a job that was a little too hasty. Do you understand anything of what I'm saying, Bulgan?
The Alwari nodded slowly.
Bulgan not dumb. Bulgan understand. Aja, that just how Bulgan feel most of the time. Not wired right.
Tilting his head slightly to one side, he stared at her hard out of his one good eye.
Padawan can fix that?
I can't make any promises, but I can try.
Fix pain in head.
Her captor was clearly exerting a considerable mental effort.
No more pain here.
He rubbed his forehead with his open palm.
That be a big thing. Bigger even maybe than credits.
The effort at extended cogitation having exhausted his limited intellectual resources, he glared at her again.
How no Bulgan can trust you?
I give you my word as a Padawan, as a student of the Jedi arts, as one who has dedicated her life to their high ideals, and to mastering the skills of a healer. Obviously torn, her captor took a deep breath, glanced circumspectly at the door, and then turned back to her.
You try fix Bulgan, but if you try trick, I...
Let me try to help you, Bulgan, please. If I fail, it costs you nothing. Even if I succeed, you can still keep me in here because the door is locked from outside.
Oh, that right. Padawan speak truth. Oh, you try.
Meeting his gaze evenly, she gestured toward her bound wrists. You have to untie me. To do this kind of work, I need my hands. He was instantly wary.
What for? Jedi trick?
No, please trust me, Bulgan. There are vastly more important things at stake here than my life or the size of your future credit account. Are you familiar with the secessionist movement?
The Ancyonian made a negative gesture.
Only movement Bulgan know is in bowels.
He thought a moment longer.
Kiakta be unhappy, he muttered.
Then he reluctantly stepped behind Barriss and passed a D-sealer across her wrists. The opaque bond that restrained them promptly dissolved, breaking down into cellulose, catalyst, and water. Relieved to have her hands free, she rubbed firmly at her wrists. As the circulation began returning, she beckoned for him to approach. Come here, Bulgan, she instructed him gently. He did so with head bowed, shuffling his feet like a child approaching its mother. A very strong, very dangerous child, she reminded herself. She did not have to ask him to lower his head farther. His poor bent spine had already placed it within reach. Extending both hands, palm downward, she tenderly cradled the sides of his skull, careful not to cover the aural openings. His flesh was warm to the touch, the normal Ancyonian body temperature being several degrees higher than that of a human. Her eyes closed, and she began to concentrate. A throbbing ran through her as her focus sharpened, an enduring, agonizing ache that through straining and training she made her own. She let herself flow outward toward it, surrounding it with the soothing balm that was her own harmonious inner self. Within the damaged, misfiring neurons that were the source of the native's ongoing hurt, the force compelled a subtle realignment of tissues, an almost imperceptible but physiologically critical alteration. She stood holding him like that for several long, silent minutes, healer and patient locked together in that mysterious, inscrutable mutual melding, comprehensible only to another master of the Jedi healing arts. Not until all felt normal and natural and well did she finally allow herself to withdraw from the vulnerable state into which she had placed them both. Opening her eyes, she found herself staring back at her captor. But there was something different about him now, a faint but discernible change of posture, a glint instead of a dullness in his eye. He straightened slightly, as much as his broken, permanently bent back would allow, and looked slowly around the room. "How do you feel?" she finally prompted him, when no words were forthcoming.
"Feel? Bulgan, feel? I feel good. Very good."
Making fists of both three-fingered hands, he raised them toward the roof.
"Really, exceptionally, remarkably good. Aja! Jaha! Ooh, ooh!"
The little dance he proceeded to perform, joyfully throwing his arms repeatedly into the air all the while, lifted her hopes in concert with his spirit. Then he stopped, lowered his hands, and said to her in a notably different tone of voice than he had used before,
"But you're still my prisoner, Padawan."
When she slumped, he grinned, showing fine Ancyonian teeth.
"For about another minute."
"You mean..." His intent became clear when he walked over to her with a spring in his step that had been absent previously, and bent to pass the desealer across her ankle bonds. They dissolved promptly, allowing her to stand. Her feet and legs numb from lack of use, she would have fallen had he not caught her in his strong arms. At which point, the door clicked and Kiakta entered the room. To say that the senior Alwari was startled by the sight that greeted his bulging eyes was an understatement worthy of a senior tax collector. The sight of the Jedi Padawan unbound was disquieting enough. The sight of her slumped slightly in her partner's arms was a spectacle that constituted an irresolvable conundrum. If Bulgan did not with his first utterance say exactly the right thing, Kiakta was ready to bolt back outside and lock them both back in. Fortunately, the heretofore guileless Bulgan was now in a cerebral position to do so.
"She fixed me,"
he informed his companion simply and straightforwardly, tapping the side of his head.
"Fixed me here. She can fix you, too."
"Fix what?" Kiakta had already taken a wary step backward. "I'm not broken. What do you mean, fix me?"
"Up here."
Once more, the mentally mended Bulgan touched hand to head.
"I have no more pain in my mind." "I know you suffer from the same syndrome, my good friend. Let her work her Jedi healing on you."
Another step back. The door was within reach. Easy to dart back out into the hallway, slam the barrier shut, and seal the lock. But what had happened to Bulgan in his absence? Kiakta wondered. He hadn't been gone very long. Only a few minutes, and now his good, honest, dumb companion in mutual exile and disgrace was talking like an infernal city councillor. No, he corrected himself, not like a councillor. Like a true Alwari nomad. Independent, confident, and free. Three fingers hovered in the vicinity of the door. The Jedi made no move to stop him, though he sensed she might have done so.
"What this nonsense about Jedi healing?" "She worked it on me. Fixed my head, my mind. It doesn't hurt anymore, Kiakta. I can think clearly again. My thoughts haven't been this free since I was a child and was thrown from that Subatar."
His voice lowered.
"That was the same throw, the bad dismount, that broke my back and stole my eye and damaged my mind."
"But I..."
Kiakta was at a loss for words. In the face of the evidence, in the face of his friend's face, he was forced to accept a seemingly inconceivable reality. There was another reality that would have to be faced, and quickly. Unbound hands outstretched, the Jedi was advancing slowly toward him.
"Let me help you, Kiakta. I give you the same promise I made to Bulgan. Whether I can help you or not, I am still your prisoner."
That was true, Kiakta realized. Dissolved bonds notwithstanding, he and his friend were still the ones in control here. Only they knew the way out of the building in which the cell was located. Unarguably, she had worked a marvel with Bulgan. Could she take away the similar pain that had afflicted him all his adult life? Remove the regular pounding waves of agony that daily stabbed through his brain? Wasn't it worth, if nothing else, a try?
"Go ahead," he told her, adding by way of warning, "if this a trick, the Bossban may not receive you undamaged."
Paying no attention to the threat,
She reached out and up to put her hands on the sides of his head and draw it toward her. Her fingers were cool against his skull, he realized, and there were too many of them, but otherwise her touch was inoffensive, calming even. Several moments later, he was blinking back at her with the same odd realization that had not long before nearly overcome his companion. Unlike Bulgan, he did not throw his arms wildly in the air and dance small circles. Instead, he bowed. As performed by an Ancyonian, it was a particularly graceful and supple gesture.
I owe you my sanity, Padawan. For had you not interceded, I see surely now that the pain I have been living with would have led all too soon to utter madness, and eventually to death.
Turning from her, he embraced his old companion in despair, long arms wrapped around Bulgan's broad shoulders, maned and bald head bobbing together in ardent mutual exultation. The joyous sight of the two Ancyonians she had been able to heal did Barriss's heart good, but it was not getting her out of this place or restoring her to her friends.
My name is Barriss Ophi. My master is the Jedi Luminara Unduli, and the sooner we find them, the better it will be for me, and the safer, I suspect, it will be for you. For surely your employer will not be pleased to learn of the unexpected turn you have done him.
Bossban Soerg, Bulgan exclaimed.
As soon as the words were out of his mouth, he looked askance at his companion. But Kiakta was not upset at the unforced revelation.
It doesn't matter now, Bulgan.
We've cast our lot in with this female. Now she is going to have to deliver us from Soerg instead of us delivering her to him. He eyed the Jedi expectantly.
Can you do that?
We throw ourselves under your protection, without which we two who stand now clanless before you will surely be food for marauding Shans before tomorrow's first light.
Get me out of here in one piece, she assured them with a grim smile, and I can promise you the gratitude of two Jedi knights and a fellow Padawan, in addition to my own personal indebtedness.
As she was slipping her lightsaber belt around her middle, she noticed Kiakta fingering a small device secured at his own waist.
What's that?
We have to call in our position at regular intervals, the Alwari explained dolefully, or we'll die.
He rubbed the back of his neck.
Bossban Soerg had explosive devices placed in our necks to ensure our compliance with his orders.
Barriss made what was, for a Padawan, a rude noise.
Typical of a Hutt. We certainly can't let him track us. Come, let me see.
Obediently, Kiakta and Bulgan approached. Taking a scanner from her belt, she passed it carefully over the indicated spot on the back of Kiakta's neck. It wasn't hard to find the inserted device. There was a perceptible bump under the skin just to the right of his mane. Checking the scanner's reading, she entered a sequence and passed the compact instrument a second time over the Alwari's neck, then repeated the procedure with Bulgan.
I could cut them out, but I'd rather have it done neatly, and I don't have the tools with me. So I just deactivated them. They're harmless now, but we'd do well to move fast. Possibly the process of my deactivating them will result in notification of whoever is monitoring you for your boss ban that something has gone wrong. I assume a rapid response will be forthcoming.
Let's go, then.
Pushing past her, Bulgan opened the door and stepped unflinchingly out onto the street. Kiakta and their former prisoner followed. Harmless, it might now be, but the lethal packet embedded in his neck still itched.
Get rid of this as soon as possible.
We will, Barriss assured him as they turned a corner onto a much busier thoroughfare.
The presence of so many sentients around them eased her tension. Until then, we'll simply tell anyone we meet to be careful what they say to you, because you happen to have an explosive personality. Prior to her discerning ministrations, Bulgan would have simply gaped dumbly at this remark. Now, both he and his friend Kiakta had the pleasure of laughing at the joke. It was the kind of pleasure that had been all too long denied them.
Sooner or later, a distraught Ogamur felt, Bossban Soerg was going to grow tired of listening to his majordomo deliver bad news.
When that happened, Ogamor knew he had better be ready to run, or at least be standing well out of range of the Hutt's massive, powerful tail.
Gone!
Soerg lay on the resting divan in his sleeping quarters.
He had been in the midst of his afternoon nap when Ogamore, driven by urgency, had felt duty-bound to wake him.
"Vanished! And those two morons with her!"
"We do not know that they are with her, Great One, only that she is missing, and so are they. Why would they suddenly decide to go with her?"
"Who knows?"
The Hutt grunted as he slouched his sagging corpus off the divan and onto the floor. Immediately, a pair of tiny Geral servants commenced the odious task of grooming the slug-like shape. Soerg ignored them as he scowled down at his subordinate.
"I smelled the stink of Jedi wiles behind this misfortune."
"The devices that were supposed to ensure the loyalty of the two abductors?" Ogamore left the question hanging.
"Pah! I activated those as soon as you told me what had happened. Either those imbeciles are now headless, or else more Jedi sleight of hand is at work in this."
As the Gerals clung to his massive body, continuing their grooming without interruption, Soerg lumbered forward. Exhibiting courage he did not feel, Ogamore held his ground. His own head, he knew, remained attached to his shoulders only because of his continuing value to the Hutt.
"Put out the word to every lowlife, criminal, lawbreaker, and felon in Kupernaum. 1,000 Republic credits to anyone who brings the accursed Padawan back to me alive, or the head of a dead Jedi. Hurry! We may still have a chance if she can be intercepted before she can rejoin her companions."
"I hear and obey, Bossban." Too relieved at the dismissal to fear a shot in the back, Ogamore whirled and fled unceremoniously from the bedroom, his comlink already out and activated. Behind him, the Gerals reflexively sealed their nostrils as their misshapen employer voided his disgust in an exceptionally ghastly and malodorous manner. No one was surprised when Luminara was the first of the anxious searchers to find Barriss and her new allies. They met in the middle of a secondary marketplace. And who might these two stalwart-looking locals be? Luminara eyed the Alwari with interest. Kiakta felt Jedi eyes burning into his own. For no reason at all, he began to shuffle his feet.
"My kidnappers, Master."
At the look on Luminara's face, Barriss had to laugh.
"Don't gauge them too harshly. Both suffered from cerebral infirmities. In return for my curing them, they helped me escape."
"A temporary escape, I'm obliged to remind you, Barriss," Balgan said.
Straining to see over the heads of vendors and customers alike, he was scanning the multitude for signs of imminent assault.
"Even as you enjoy this happy moment, I'd wager my last good credit that Bossban Soerg is sending a host of cutthroats in pursuit of us all."
"Then we must hasten to leave."
Pulling a comlink from her belt, Luminara addressed it briefly, listened to a reply, spoke again, and replaced it.
"Obi-Wan and Anakin are hurrying to join us."
She pointed. They had to wait only a short while on the steps of the Lorqual Fountain before a swirl of robes in the crowd marked Obi-Wan's arrival. Anakin was not far behind him. Both greeted Barriss in the traditional Jedi fashion, ceremonial yet affectionate. Balgan observed the proceedings in silence. Only when the formalities had been concluded did he venture to inquire, while swatting away a hovering green-winged pex,
"What are you going to do now?"
Luminara turned to him.
"We have secured an agreement with the Unity of Community to make peace with the nomads, if the Alwari will consent to share a percentage of their traditional lands with the city folk. In return, the city folk will agree to provide the Alwari with all manner of advanced goods and services, and will not try to intrude on or otherwise alter the time-honored Alwari way of life. Each will respect the other, and the Senate will stay, insofar as it is possible for bureaucrats to do so, out of Ancyonian affairs. In return, Ancyon will remain within the Republic, which will ensure its economic and political independence from the Commerce Guild. Among others," her tone darkened, "Ancyon will not become another Naboo."
Kiakta scratched at the bare skin of his neck, careful not to irritate the explosive still buried there.
"Sounds complicated to me."
"So it is," Obi-Wan admitted. "More complicated than should be necessary. But that's the way of things these days.
Do you think the Alwari will accede to such a proposal?"
Barriss was watching her friends and the crowd simultaneously. The two nomads exchanged a look.
It depends on how it is put to them, Kyakta finally decided. If you can get the most prominent of the overclans, the Baroki, to agree, the others will follow their lead and fall into line. Among the Alwari, it has always been so. The ever-wary Anakin leaned close to Obi-Wan.
Master, do you think it wise to place our trust and requirements in such as these?
Obi-Wan pursed his lips. I sense no danger in these two.
Neither did Barriss, Anakin pointed out sagaciously, until they abducted her.
That was before she performed her healing. I think we shall be well looked after by this grateful pair. And they offer us an advantage we could not have hoped to obtain from the city folk. Being Alwari themselves, they should find the right path and make the eventual necessary introductions as well or better than any others we could hire here in Kupernaud.
Good.
Luminara sidestepped a trio of wandering yelps, bent down beneath the weight of shopping bags nearly as large as themselves.
Then we can hire a land speeder and proceed to...
No, no, Bulgan cautioned her. No land speeders. We must take with us as few examples of galactic technology as possible. All Alwari are die-hard traditionalists. As you already know, this argument between them and the people of the towns centers largely on differences between long-established customs and new ways of doing things, of living. If you wish to gain the trust of the Baroki, to prove from the beginning that you do not favor the city folk, then you must approach them with reverence for the old ways.
Obi-Wan nodded amiably. Very well, then. No land speeders. How do we travel?
For traversing the great prairies, there are many riding animals that are suitable.
Anakin made a face.
Animals?
By far the best is the Subatar.
Kiakta's enthusiasm was palpable.
If you can afford them, they are the preferred means of travel for Alwari Highborn. Arriving in a camp atop one immediately marks the rider as a person of consequence, not to mention taste.
Riding a Subatar is like riding the wind.
An eager Bulgan leapt over a dozing Krolin. As he cleared its wide jaws, it pawed at him indifferently and went back to sleep.
Anakin shrugged. I'm a champion pod racer. I'm afraid no organic riding steed, no matter how noble it might be considered locally, is going to impress me very much.
But he was wrong. At the shoulder, the magnificent Subatars stood thrice the height of a human. They were six-legged, with long splayed toes that seemed wholly out of place on a creature designed for running through open grasslands. When Anakin pointed out this seeming evolutionary disparity to Kyakta, the Alwari laughed.
You'll see what they are for, Jedi Padawan.
Pulling back on the double set of reins, he effortlessly turned his own newly acquired mount. The lightweight but thickly padded saddle was cinched between the front and middle shoulders. Between middle shoulders and rear haunches, a second sway back would accommodate a sizable pack of supplies. Having been negotiated for and priced, these were in the process of being loaded onto the complacent animals by the merchant's busy underlings.
Food, water, accessories, all has been acquired and accounted for, Master Barriss.
Bulgan had his own booted long-toed feet thrust forward in stirrups that were slung on either side of the Subatar's neck instead of hanging downward. The smooth arch of the saddle behind him cradled his crippled back.
Ah, Haja,
he exclaimed with evident pleasure.
To sit like this brings back many memories.
Following Kiakta's instructions, Luminara straddled her own mount. Despite its height, she had no trouble doing so. First, because it was presently crouched down awaiting its rider, and second, because the body was lean and narrow. The reason for the saddle became immediately apparent. Without it, one would be seated directly atop the line of protruding vertebrae.
Ilap!
Kyakta barked. Starting from the front, the Subatar rose one set of legs at a time, front, middle, and finally rear. The reason for the high-arching leather curve at the back of the saddle was now clear. With no support behind her, the angle of ascent would have sent Luminara bouncing down the creature's spine all the way to the ground.
Of course, these are domesticated individuals, Bulgan told her, divining her thoughts. Wild Subatars have been known to attack and destroy entire caravans.
Well, that's reassuring.
Bobbing from side to side atop his patient mount, Anakin was struggling to maintain his balance. Kiakta noted the trouble he was having and came alongside.
You're sitting up too straight, Master Anakin. Lean back into the vian, the saddle support. There, that's it. See how your legs now thrust naturally into the forward stirrups?
But I can't see as well in this position, the Padawan complained, struggling to hang on to the double set of reins.
I think we're up high enough to see anything of importance, Obi-Wan told him.
He lay back in the saddle as one to the manner born. Look on this as another unexpected episode in your education.
I'd rather be educated in a late model land speeder, Anakin grumbled.
But Kiakta was right. The more he leaned back and trusted the saddle, the sturdier and more stable he felt. Maybe this wouldn't be so bad after all. Could he trust himself to a strange alien animal? The Subatars were certainly handsome creatures, with their protruding silver-flecked eyes, single wide flaring nostril, and smooth skulls. Their ears were set flush against their skulls, and unlike the Ancyonians, they had no manes. The striped fur was short and dense, evolved to provide maximum insulation with minimum wind resistance. Tails were leg length, but as slender as the rest of the beast. Everything about the creatures spoke to one end: speed.
Everyone ready?
Holding his steed's reins effortlessly in one hand, Kiakta looked back at his companions. Balgan signaled that the last of the supplies had been loaded.
Then let's go and find the Baroki.
Facing forward, he slapped his mount on the smooth back of its neck and shouted sharply,
Ilap!
The Subatar seemed to rise from the ground. In reality, it had simply launched into the requested gallop. The six-legged gait was extraordinarily smooth, Luminara noted delightedly. There was little sensation of jouncing or jolting. Leaning back in the saddle's vian, her fine, strong legs thrust calf-length into the deep leather stirrups, she watched the city fly past.
Hey, watch where you're going!
Sluggish pedestrians had to scramble to get out of their way. Far sooner than she expected, they sped beneath the high-arching Govialti gate of the old city and found themselves on a dirt road leading westward. Kiakta came pounding up alongside her. Despite what struck the Jedi as an extreme pace, she noted that his mount was not even breathing hard.
Are you comfortable then, Master Luminara?
The guide shouted to make himself heard.
It's wonderful, she yelled back. Like riding on a cloud made of spun Dramassian silk.
Outside the city walls, they were exposed to the near-constant winds that circled the planet endlessly. Cool air rushed past her face, the Subatar's long, narrow, slightly triangular skull parting it like the prow of a ship.
Kiakta,
she called out to the rider galloping alongside her.
It's good to leave the city behind so swiftly, but aren't you concerned about overexerting our mounts? Won't this pace tire them quickly?
Overexerting? Tire? From his saddle, he eyed her quizzically. Then realization dawned.
Oh, you do not understand. But that is reasonable. None of you have ever seen a Subatar before, much less ridden one.
Pulling his slim legs and feet free of his stirrups, he stood up on the back of his pounding steed and looked back the way they had come, holding onto the crest of the vian for balance.
No one pursues us, but of one thing I'm sure, Boss Van Soerg is not snoring this business away.
Sitting back down and resuming his former riding posture, he smiled at her anew.
You're sure you are comfortable? It feels almost natural. As I told you, I'm enjoying it.
He performed the Ancyonian equivalent of a nod.
Then there's no need for us to continue dawdling here.
Raising his voice and freeing his feet from the stirrups, he leaned forward once again and shouted,
Ilap!
At the same time, he kicked his mount sharply with his heels, making contact simultaneously on both front shoulders.
By the Force!
Anakin exclaimed as he grabbed for something to brace himself with. Barriss started laughing wildly, the acceleration sending her cowl and the folds of her robes streaming backward like flames. Obi-Wan deigned to wake up. Until then, it seemed, the Subatars had only been trotting. At Kiakta's command, they broke into a six-legged sprint of such speed that their long-toed legs seemed not to touch the ground. When they did, six long, powerful clawed toes dug into the hard-packed dirt and flung it backward. 36 such digits propelled each ground-thundering Subatar forward with a velocity that left the thoroughly exhilarated Luminara momentarily breathless. Which was not surprising, since they were now outpacing the wind. It was not merely beautiful out on the endless prairie that covered much of Ancyon's landmass. It was magnificent. At least Luminara thought so. Barriss agreed with her, while Obi-Wan was impressed but noncommittal. As usual, Anakin wished himself elsewhere, but refrained from saying so more than once a day. A year ago, he would have been bemoaning his situation 2 or 3 times a day, Obi-Wan pointed out that evening to Luminara. I suppose it's a sign that he's maturing. Nearby, Kiakta and Bulgan were busy with the camp, preparing food and making tea. Behind them, a ways off, the 6 splendid Subatars had been set down for the night. Their legs folded beneath their powerful, slender bodies, the graceful steeds busied themselves browsing the grasses and grains that grew in abundance all around them. Why is he so stressed all the time? Leaning up against the vian of the saddle that the guides had uncinched and removed from her ruminating mount, she chewed on the stick of nut-flavored nutrient and waited for her tea to get hot. The central campfire was reflected in Obi-Wan's eyes. Anakin, as is common in such instances, there's more than one reason. For one thing, he feels obligated to excel. This is largely a product of his difficult upbringing, so different from that of the average Padawan. Also, he misses many things. Anyone who trains to become Jedi knows they will have to give up many things. He nodded in agreement. He fears he will never see his mother, whom he loves very much, ever again. That was a terrible mistake. Force-sensitive infants are removed from their families before they can form such dangerously lasting attachments. She looked to her right, to the other side of the camp. Will he ever see his mother again, do you think? She asked thoughtfully. Who can say? If it was up to him, he would. But it's not up to him any more than the direction of my future travelings are up to me. We go where the Council sends us. As for Anakin, there are other things occupying his thoughts besides his mother. I can sense the turmoil that bubbles inside him. But when I bring it up, he refuses to acknowledge that such disturbances even exist. Strange how he is willing to question the validity of everything but his own inner uncertainties. Ah, reaching down, she picked up the self-heating tumbler of hot Ancyonian tea. It was black and sweet, with the distinctive tang of the open plains. Everything here tasted of the prairie, she was coming to realize. Given so much powerful self-denial, do you really think he can become a full Jedi Knight? I don't know. I really don't know. But I promised Master Qui-Gon that I would try my best to make it happen. To that end, I have disagreed before the Council with Master Yoda himself. Yes, I have my doubts. But a promise is a promise. If Anakin succeeds in overcoming his own internal demons, he will make a great Jedi, and Master Qui-Gon's judgment will be vindicated. They've left, you know. Ogamore relaxed in the chair. It was a fine apartment, expensively decorated and furnished. An apartment suitable for a long-term stay by a visiting dignitary. Its present owner poured himself a tall glass of something cold and lavender. Inwardly, Ogamore shuddered. What perverse desire explained the human affection for iced liquids? The member of the Unity delegation gestured with the bottle. Can I offer you a glass? This is a fine vintage, properly fermented. Ogamore smiled in the human manner and politely declined. He could feel the chill from the bottle from where he sat. With a shrug, the human put down the bottle, raised the glass, and drank. Ogamore felt his insides shudder in sympathy. I know they've left. We all know. They've gone to try to make an agreement with the Alwari. What do you think of their chances? I think they're as good as dead already. They've been gone for several days with no word. He shifted uncomfortably in the human chair that made no allowance for his short tail. It's in the nature of Jedi not to open their mouths unless they have something significant to say. Speaking of which, he added as he sat down on the couch opposite, why are you here? In the interests of expediting a decision that is critical to the future of Ancyon. My future, your future, every citizen's future. The human delegate sipped at his drink. Go on. Ogamore leaned forward, feeling relief as his tail popped out from beneath his backside. The Unity Council was on the verge of voting on whether or not to withdraw from the Republic when these Jedi off-worlders arrived. I know. The man was not pleased. That, at least, was a good sign, Ogamore felt. That's the Senate for you, always sending in a Jedi or two when their own obtuse directives get ignored. Serves them right. You'd think they would have come to expect it by now.
These Jedi have nothing to do with Ancion, Ogamore persisted. The many peoples of this world, settlers as well as indigenous, have always acted independently and in their own interests.
The delegate raised his glass in mock salute. Here's to the Republic, of which we're still a part. Sorry, Ogamore, but our independence only extends so far.
Not if we secede. Others will join our action.
Yes, the human sighed. I've read the fine print in the treaties. They make us more important than we would otherwise be. Hence the attention of the Jedi.
How were you intending to vote?
Ogamore did his best not to seem too interested. His attempt at disinterest did not fool the delegate. You'd like to know that, wouldn't you? You and your master the Hutt and his associates in galactic trade.
Bossban Soerg has many friends, it is true.
Ancionian eyes locked on human ones.
Not all are in business.
The delegate's expression, cordial enough up to now, suddenly turned withering.
Are you threatening me, Ogamore? You and that overweight slug you call a boss?
Not at all, the visitor to the apartment replied quickly.
On the contrary, I am here to show my respect, as well as that of my bossman, and his associates. As residents of Ancion, we are all concerned for the future of our world.
He smiled again.
Just because a couple of Jedi have arrived here does not mean we should stand around in awed stupefaction.
The human's gaze narrowed.
What are you getting at?
Ogamore made a gesture of indifference.
Why should the Unity sit and founder while waiting for the Jedi to return? Suppose, for example, they do not come back from the plains. They've gone to try to influence the Alwari. Suppose the Alwari influence them.
The human's expression showed that he had not considered this line of reasoning.
If the Jedi don't come back, or come back changed, you're saying that after talking with the Alwari, they might be persuaded to favor the nomad point of view?
Ogamore looked away.
I didn't say that at all. It's only that in the Jedi's absence, there is nothing to prevent the Unity Council from moving forward instead of sitting still. Are we of Ancion nothing more than mewling infants to sit around and wait on the movements of off-worlders, be they Jedi or not?
Nodding slowly, the human finished the last of his drink in one long cold swallow.
What would you have me do?
Ogamore sniffed through his single broad nostril.
Call the council back into session. Take the vote. If the Jedi object to the result, let them file a complaint with the Senate. Ancion already has a government, free of outside influences. What could be the harm in taking the vote?
That it could be overturned by the Senate. Ogamore nodded understandingly.
Votes are harder to overturn once they have been taken. If the Jedi were here, there would be reason not to call for the vote, but they are not here.
He gestured toward the window and, by implication, the plains beyond.
They have gone. By choice.
The delegate was silent for a long moment. When at last he looked back up at his visitor, there was hesitation in his voice.
It won't be an easy thing, what you ask. The Armalat in particular will object, and you know what they can be like.
Ogamore gestured significantly.
Time overcomes stubbornness. The longer the Jedi remain away from Kupernaum, the greater will be the erosion of confidence in their abilities among the other members of the Council. My bossman and his friends are relying on your known powers of persuasion.
I don't know, the human murmured, clearly wavering.
Your efforts will not go unappreciated.
Ogamore rose, glad to be able to abandon the uncomfortable, ill-fitting chair.
Think about it. According to my bossman, changes are coming to the Republic. Changes beyond anything you or I can imagine.
In passing his host on the way to the door, he leaned close and lowered his voice.
I am assured it would be most advantageous to be on one side of these changes rather than the other.
The human did not see his guest out. He didn't have the time, having been left with too much to think about. Led by their Alwari guides, the two Jedi Masters and their Padawans found themselves topping a rise, looking down at a slight depression in the prairie. A sizable but shallow lake had formed there. Except for the center, it was filled with a peculiar spotted, multi-jointed bluish reed. At one end of the lake, an encampment had been established. A temporary corral held domesticated dorgum and larger, heavier-humped awiquad. Smoke rose from collapsible huts fashioned from imported composite materials. Each hut was tiled with anamorphic solar material that converted Ancion's abundant sunlight directly into power. Luminara and Obi-Wan rode up to flank Kiakta and Bulgan. Their guides were leaning forward to peer around the heads of their mounts as they contemplated the camp.
Baroki? Luminara asked hopefully.
By the style of their camp, I would say they are Yiwa, Kiakta informed her. Of the Kimo Adrangar. Not an unimportant clan, such as the Aijin or Gaxan, but not an overclan like the Baroki or the Janul either.
If they have power, Obi-Wan wondered as he examined the solar huts, why the need for campfires?
Tradition.
Bulgan swiveled his crooked form around to focus his good eye on the man mounted next to him.
By now you should know, Jedi, how important that is to the Alwari, and to the success of your mission.
Obi-Wan accepted the mild reminder gracefully. A correction added to one's store of knowledge. It was a thing to be grateful for, not something to take offense at.
Kiakta pointed.
They come to greet us. The Yiwa are a proud clan. They are constantly on the move, even more so than many of the Alwari. They may have news of the Overclan Baroki for us, if they are willing to part with it.
Why wouldn't they? Luminara asked directly.
Bulgan blinked his one eye.
The Yiwa are a touchy people, quick to take offense.
Then we'll be on our best behavior. Obi-Wan turned in his saddle.
Won't we, Anakin?
His Padawan frowned uncertainly. Why are you all looking at me? The Yiwa came pounding up the slight slope, mounted on Sadanes. Stocky and powerful, the four-legged steeds had round faces with four eyes. The welcoming party slowed. There were a dozen of them, decked out in suitably barbaric finery. Homemade bells and polished teeth, taken from some of Ancion's less benign fauna, alternated with flash color pans and the latest glowels imported from other worlds of the Republic. The riders had painted their individual manes in a riot of colors and patterns. The bare skin on either side at the top of each Yiwa head was tattooed in intricate traditional Ancionian patterns. Their appearance was a vivid mélange of the long-established and the contemporary, exactly what one would expect on a world like Ancion. Two of them held comlinks that doubtless kept them in constant contact with the camp, while several of the riders pointedly displayed weapons that were anything but primitive. Having the advantage of a much higher seat, Kiakta nudged his subatar forward a couple of paces and identified himself and his companions. The Yiwa listened stonily. Then one, wearing a cape fashioned from two arc-striped shan skins, kicked his equally well-decorated sadane forward. His bulging red-brown eyes traveled suspiciously between Alwari and off-worlders. Luminara expected initial comments to be directed at her or her fellow humans. She was wrong. The crash training in the most frequently spoken local vernacular she and her companions had received prior to being dispatched to Ancion now proved its worth. The Yiwa dialect was harsh, but not incomprehensible.
I am Mazong Yiwa. What are clanless ones doing riding subatars?
Kiakta swallowed. Obi-Wan was shocked at the ease and speed with which the heretofore confident guide was intimidated.
We beg your understanding, Highborn Mazong. Through no faults of our own, my friend and I, he indicated Bulgan, have been forced to travel the trail of the outcast. We suffered greatly and have only recently been restored to health, if not clan, by these wise and generous offworlders. They are representatives of the Galactic Republic itself, come to treat with the Overclan Baroki.
Leaning to his right, Mazong spit deliberately at the foot of Kiakta's subatar. The great animal did not move. Anakin started to tense, but seeing his master apparently unconcerned, did his best to appear likewise.
The matter of your casting out remains unknown to us. Why should we believe you, or invite you to partake of our hospitality? If not us,
Bulgan responded. Then do so for our friends. They are Jedi Knights.
There was a stir among the welcoming party. Luminara remembered what they had been told in Kupernaum. While the Alwari nomads chose to hew to their traditional way of life, that did not mean they were primitive or eschewed modern conveniences. The comlinks and solar-powered homes, the blaster rifles and sidearms they displayed were proof enough of that. Mazong's gaze roved among the humans. As he carried out his inspection, he shaded his eyes with one limber three-fingered hand. Because of the protruding convex nature of their eyes, Ancyonians could not squint.
I have heard of the Jedi.
The leader of the Yiwa band kept his hands on the circlet of flexible metal that looped through the bump of cartilage above the huge single nostril of his sadane.
They are said to be honorable people, unlike so many of those they work for.
When none of the humans chose to react to this spur-of-the-moment provocation, Mazong grunted approvingly.
If you seek an overclan, why trouble the Yiwa with your presence?
Behind him, his clanfolk stirred expectantly.
You know how the Baroki move about and how they would react to being tracked by machines.
Kiakta held his subatar steady. Mazong laughed, and several of his supporters smiled.
They would blow them out of the sky, along with any who came after them.
Aja, Bulgan agreed. So we seek them out in the time-honored way.
He indicated the community by the lake.
A fine camp, but as usual a temporary one.
It is ever such for the Yiwa, as for all Alwari. In your recent traveling, have you come across any of the Overclan?
Trotting forward, a magnificently bedecked female whispered into one of Mazong's oral cavities. Indicating understanding, he looked back up at the visitors.
This is no place for conversation. Come down to our camp. We will eat and talk and consider your needs.
Looking past the two guides, he locked eyes with Luminara.
An agreeable color, Blue. No indication of whether the individual behind it is likewise.
Turning, he urged his Sadane to a gallop. Yelling and waving their weapons, his clan folk followed him. The visitors were guided to a transitory central square that had been created by placing half a dozen of the self-erecting huts in a semicircle facing the lake. Laughing and squealing children appeared from nowhere to flank the group, while the youthful equivalents of Anakin and Barriss stared in obvious envy at the two Padawans. Anakin did his best to stifle any incipient feelings of superiority. It was an ongoing problem with him that Obi-Wan had been at pains to point out on more than one occasion. Their subatars were taken away amid mutterings of admiration for such first-class mounts. Luminara had a momentary concern for their supplies, but Kiakta reassured her.
We are officially guests now, Master. To steal anything from us would be to breach ancient traditions of hospitality. The thief would be cast out permanently, if not fed to the Shans. Worry not for your belongings.
She put a hand on his arm.
Forgive me for not trusting you, Kiakta. I know you would have said something if there was any reason for concern.
They were led to the edge of the lake. A section of reeds had been cleared away to provide a clear view across the tranquil body of water. Small balls of black fluff darted among the reeds, chirping like runaway alarms. Intricately woven mats topped with thickly padded cushions had been set out on the bare ground. While the adults went about their business, and children barely coming into their manes watched silently from a respectful distance, Mazong and two advisors sat cross-legged opposite their guests. Food and drink were provided. One of the advisors, an elderly female whose sweeping arch of a mane had gone entirely gray, leaned forward.
Why should we help you find the Overclan?
This anticipated question allowed Obi-Wan to launch into an explanation of their purpose in coming to Ancyon. The Yiwa listened quietly, occasionally bending to eat or drink from the modest meal that had been set out before them. When the Jedi had finished, the two advisors caucused, then whispered something to Mazong. He indicated agreement and turned back to the guests.
Like all the Alwari, we dislike and remain ever suspicious of the motives of the city folk, even though we all do business with the Unity. What you ask would change relationships on our world forever.
Raising a hand, he forestalled Luminara's comment.
However, that is not necessarily a bad thing. Time changes everything, and even the Alwari must adapt.
But before we will ever agree to do so, we must have guarantees that our rights to our traditional way of life will be protected. We know there have been previous visitations by representatives of the Senate. Those we do not and will never trust. As for the Jedi...
Once again, Luminara found him staring at her.
We have heard that they are different, that they are honorable, that they are hybrid. If you can prove this to us, to our satisfaction, then we will feel secure enough to at least point you in the direction of the Baroki.
Luminara and Obi-Wan whispered while their guides and the two Padawans looked on. When the older Jedi separated, it was Luminara who spoke.
Ask of us what you will, noble Mazong, and if it is within our power to comply, we'll certainly do so.
Exclamations of satisfaction came from the chief and his advisors.
What kind of proof do they want? Barriss found herself wondering. What kind of assurance could off-worlders give to natives that would convince them of the genuine good intentions of their visitors?
Unsurprisingly, it was not what she would have expected. Rising, Mazong gestured toward the camp.
Tonight we will have a proper feast. There will be entertainment. Among the Alwari, it is traditional for guests to provide it. We have never heard of representatives of your Senate deigning to do this. To us, this says that they have no souls. If the Jedi can show us that they, like the Yiwa, also have souls, then the Yiwa will believe they possess what their politicians are lacking.
Barriss's lower jaw dropped. To her surprise, Luminara was smiling agreeably.
We will meet your terms, noble Mazong. But I must warn you, aesthetics are not the first thing a Jedi masters. You may find our presentations less polished than those of your usual guests.
All but openly affable now, Mazong stepped forward to place a hand on her head. The long fingers reached to the back of her neck.
Whatever you do, it will have the virtue of novelty. For now, though, I have only one question that has troubled me since first you arrived.
Looking up at the Yiwa, she felt only slightly concerned.
What is it?
Why, he asked frankly, do you tattoo your chin and underlip instead of the top of your head, as is proper?
For the second time since their arrival, food and drink had been laid out in copious quantities. Having already consumed samples of Yiwa fare, they found that the individual components of the lavish banquet had lost some of their exoticism. They were delivered straight from the transportable high-tech kitchen by lines of young Yiwa clad in guest-greeting finery. Kyakta and Bulgan sat like regal potentates, still unable to quite believe their good fortune. Thanks to Barriss's healing and Jedi largesse, for two clanless vagabonds, they had come a very long way in an exceedingly short time. Sipping on the needle-thin tube of a bulb-like sticer, Mazong turned expectantly to his company.
And now, my friends, the time has come for you to prove to us that Jedi have not just ability, but inner essence, unlike the representatives of the great but soulless Senate.
If I may suggest, Kyakta began,
the chieftain shut him down with a sharp gesture.
You may not suggest, clanless vagrant. The Yiwa remain uncertain about you.
Looking back to the Jedi, he smiled.
Rest assured, no matter how badly you do, we will not eat you. We do not keep every tradition.
That's nice to know, Obi-Wan murmured.
He wasn't concerned about whether or not he and his companions were considered suitable for consumption. He was worried about a dearth of information. If the Yiwa refused to help them, they might waste weeks searching for the Baroki. During that time, the mischief-makers and would-be secessionists among the Unity were not likely to be idle.
I'll go first.
Barriss rose abruptly to her feet. Moving to the center of the open space, which had been carpeted with a fresh flooring of clean quartz sand taken from the beach that fronted the lake, she turned to face her friends. There was a stir among the watching Yiwa. What would the flat-eyed, many-digited, maneless female visitor do? No one waited with more curiosity than Anakin. Luminara gestured encouragingly at her Padawan. Nodding, Barriss reached down and removed the lightsaber from her belt. Immediately, several of the armed Yiwa went for their own weapons. Seeing that the other visitors remained seated and calm, a confident Mazong waved off his agitated sentries. In the chill, still air of early night, Barriss' lightsaber blazed. She held it aloft, glowing perpendicularly, its soft hum rising above the approving murmurs of the watching Ewa. Not exactly a dynamic performance, Anakin reflected, but certainly an arresting image. He wondered if their hosts would consider striking a pose sufficient to satisfy their requirements. And then, Barriss began to move. Slowly at first, darting from left to right and back again, then north to south, her footprints laid out a design in the sand that marked the four points of the compass. The Ewa saw right away what she was honoring with her movements. As a nomadic people, they were particularly appreciative. The Padawan moved faster and faster, gradually increasing the speed of her jumps until she was bouncing from point to point as if dancing atop a concealed trampoline. All the while, she held her flaring lightsaber aloft, the spear of luminance piercing the night. The athleticism of the performance was a tribute to her conditioning. It went, Anakin decided admiringly, well beyond basic Jedi training. Then, just when it seemed she could move no faster, she began to twirl the lightsaber. Spectators gasped softly, and there sounded the first hisses and whistles of genuine admiration. It was a revelation to Anakin, who until now had never thought of the conventional Jedi lightsaber as anything but a weapon. That outside the fencing arena, it could also be a thing of beauty that never occurred to him. But in Barriss's hands, it was transformed from a lethal tool into an instrument of effulgent splendor. Spinning rapidly now as she continued to skip between the four points of the compass, the beam of spectral energy fooled the eyes into seeing a solid ring of light above her head. She began to swing the lightsaber, creating a lambent disc first on her right side, then on her left. Leaping from north to south, she brought her knees up to her chest and passed the beam beneath her feet, drawing sharp inhalations of surprise and awe from her audience. Several times, she repeated the dangerous jump. Looking on as intently as any Ewa, Anakin knew that if she misjudged height or swing, she could easily cut her feet off at the ankles. A greater miscalculation could result in the loss of an arm, or a leg, or her head. The potential deadliness of the dance added greatly to the suspense and to the brilliance of the performance. Drawing to a conclusion, Barriss jumped straight toward Mazong, executed a double flip with the lightsaber whirling beneath her, and landed on her knees, not an arm length in front of him. To his considerable credit, the Ewa chieftain did not flinch, but his eyes never left the spinning lightsaber. Another bit of Alwari lore was imparted to the visitors as the assembled clan demonstrated their approval not only with hisses and whistles, but with a mass cracking of the knuckles of their lissom long-fingered hands. Waves of popping swept over the gathering. As for Mazong, he quietly consulted with his advisors. Breathing hard, her lightsaber deactivated and refastened to her belt, Barriss resumed her seat alongside her companions. Luminara leaned over to whisper to her Padawan.
A fine exhibition, Barriss, but that last stunt was truly treacherous. It would make me unhappy to have to return to Kupernaum with you in less than one piece. I've practiced it before, Master.
The Padawan was well pleased with herself.
I know it's a dangerous move, but we do want to make as strong an impression as possible on these people so that they'll help us. Striking off your own limb would certainly make an impression.
Seeing the younger woman's expression fall, Luminara reached out and gave her an encouraging hug.
I don't mean to be overly critical. You did well. I'm proud of you.
So am I. Obi-Wan glanced to his right, to the pensive young man seated next to him. It's your turn, Anakin. That snapped Anakin out of his introspection.
Me? But, Master Obi-Wan, I can't do anything like that. I haven't been trained for it. I'm a fighter, not an artist. Nothing I could do would begin to approach Barriss's presentation.
It doesn't have to approach it. Obi-Wan was patient with his Padawan. But the chieftain clearly indicated he wanted to ascertain the existence of a soul in all of us. That means you too, Anakin. The younger man chewed his lower lip.
I don't suppose my sworn and witness statement to the effect that I have one would be sufficient.
I think not, Obi-Wan replied dryly. Stand out there, Anakin, and show them some soul. I know that you have one. The Force overflows with beauty. Draw on it. With great reluctance, Anakin unfolded his legs and stood. Aware of the many eyes on him, humanoid as well as Ancyonian, he strode slowly to the center of the sand-paved clearing. What could he possibly do to convince these people of his inner nature, to show them that he was as much a feeling being as the gravity-defying Barriss? He had to do something. His master had insisted on it. He didn't want to be here, in this circle of light in the middle of a nowhere place on a nowhere world. He wanted to be on Coruscant, or home, or... The one memory that overrode all others jarred something loose, something from his childhood. It possessed the virtues of simplicity, a song, slow, sad, and melancholic, but full of affection for the one who was listening. His mother had sung it to him frequently, when money was scarce, and when desert winds howled outside their simple dwelling. She would appreciate the words of that song, which he had struggled to sing back to her on numerous occasions. That opportunity had not presented itself for many years now, ever since he had left her and the world of his birth. Now, he imagined that she was here, standing before him, her comforting and reassuring face smiling warmly back at him. Since she was not here to sing along with him, to remind him of the words, he was forced to draw entirely on his memories. As he imagined his mother standing there before him, everything else faded away. The expectant Mazong, the onlooking Yiwa, his companions, even Master Obi-Wan. Only she remained, and himself. The simple but soaring melody from his youth rolled out across the attentive assembly, silencing the children and causing Sadanes and Subatars alike to turn their dozy ears in the direction of the central compound. It floated free and strong across the lake and among the reeds, to finally lose itself in the vastness of the northern prairie. None of the watchful Yiwa understood any of the words, but the strength of the young man's voice and the ardor with which he sang more than succeeded in conveying his loneliness. Even this was unnecessary. While the human song was utterly different from their own edgier harmonies, like so much music, it succeeded in reaching across the boundary between species. It took Anakin a moment to realize that he had finished. Blinking, he scrutinized his diverse audience. Then the whistling began, and the hissing, and the coordinated knuckle-cracking. He ought to have been pleased. Instead, he hurried to resume his place alongside his master, head down, face flushed, trying and failing to hide his discomfiture. Someone was patting him approvingly on the back. It was Bulgan, bent and contorted, his face alight with pleasure. "Good sounds, Master Anakin. Good sounds." He put one hand to an oral opening. "You please every Alwari."
"Was it all right?" Anakin asked hesitantly of the man seated next to him.
To his surprise, he saw that his master was eyeing him with uncommon approval. "Just when I think I have you figured out, Anakin, you unleash another surprise on me. I had no idea you could sing like that."
"Neither did I, really," the Padawan replied shyly. "I managed to find some inspiration in an old memory.
Sometimes that's the best source." Obi-Wan started to rise. It was his turn. Anakin watched while his teacher strode confidently to the center of the sands. What was Obi-Wan Kenobi going to do to reveal to the Yiwa his inner self? Anakin was as curious as any spectator. He had never seen Obi-Wan sing or dance, paint or sculpt. In point of fact, he felt, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Jedi Knight, was something of a dry personality. This in no way limited his skill as a teacher, Anakin knew. Obi-Wan spent a moment mentally reviewing his knowledge of the local vernacular, making certain he could handle the Yiwa dialect. Then he folded his hands in front of him, cleared his throat, and began to speak. That was all. No acrobatic leaps a la buoyant Padawan Barriss. No full-throated euphonious declamation of emotion like Anakin. He just spoke. But it was music, nonetheless. Obi-Wan wove a tale that, like all great stories, began simply enough. Unpromisingly, even. But as details began to emerge, as profound truths could be discerned through the lens of adventure, it became impossible for anyone to leave. Try as they might, Yiwa young and old could not tear themselves away from the tale the Jedi told. There was a hero, of course, and a heroine. And where both are present, there invariably arises a love story, poignant and true. Greater issues than the feelings of the two lovers were at stake. The fate of millions lay in the balance, their very lives and the lives of their children dependent on the making of correct decisions, on choosing to fight for truth and justice. There was sacrifice and war, betrayal and revelation, greed and revenge. And in the end, as the fate of the two lovers hung suspended like a small weight from a thread, redemption. Beyond that, the humble storyteller could not see, could not say. A confession that provoked cries of unsatisfied frustration from his audience. With a soft smile, Obi-Wan asked if they really wanted to hear how it all turned out. The chorus of concurrence that followed woke half the beasts in the corrals. Even Mazong, Anakin noted, had been sucked into the tale and required closure. Raising his hands, Obi-Wan requested and received a silence so complete that the small furry scratchers on the far side of the lake could be heard rubbing their abdomens against the rocks there. In a voice deliberately hushed, he resumed the story, his voice never rising but the words coming faster and faster, until his audience, leaning forward the better to hear and not miss a single word, threatened to collapse en masse onto the sand. When he delivered the final surprise, there were shouts of joy and much appreciative laughter from the onlookers, followed by intense discussions of the tale just told. Ignoring these, Obi-Wan walked quietly back to his place and took his seat. So overcome were the Yiwa by the telling that they forgot to hiss or whistle or crack a single knuckle in appreciation. It didn't matter. There was no need for applause. Obi-Wan's saga had passed beyond the need for simple approval into the realm of complete acceptance.